It looks like goddamn Mario Kart. Checkered everything.
There's something on that car.
The hang.
Daddy's home.
What the shit? Race control.
Right. One more car and I'm taking it out of your ass.
I'ma take this track and make it my bitch.
Did you know that races are won and lost in the pits?
I did not know that.
Did you not?
The IMS is the best there ever was.
Daddy doesn't do road cars. Daddy only does ovals.
We certainly don't take ourselves that seriously, so you shouldn't.
Welcome to Fast Cars, Fast Girls with Abby and Molly.
All right, so with us here today, we have Mike Hull, who is the race strategist. Is that the official title?
Oh, that's good. You're talking about the Scott Dixon.
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct.
Also within the Chip Ganassi Racing, it's actually just like, you know, everybody who does everything.
Yeah, I've worked for Chip for a long, long time, so I get to do a little bit of everything. Yeah.
Good.
Very cool. So what's your favorite part of your job or most fun part of your job? With the many things that you do, so yeah. We won't have you list everything out interview.
No, it's a really great question.
But yeah, the most fun thing for you.
What I signed up for is the race weekends, the racetrack. What's happened with motorsports, especially with people like me, with the responsibilities that you end up with based on experience, is you have to do a lot of things during the week to get to the racetrack that we never used to have to do. It used to be that we could just spend the week working together on race cars and we could go racing, and these days we have to do a lot of administrative things and lots of other things. So I love going to the racetrack and I love racing itself, and I'm in a fortunate position because with what I do in Indianapolis from Chip, I get to go to the IndyCar races and the IMSA races, both. So I do 31 races a year between the two, so I get to race a lot, and that's what I signed up to do.
Yeah, that's excellent. So I assume you're pretty much a lifelong race fan.
Yeah, I grew up as a race fan as a kid in Southern California.
Okay, who was your favorite driver?
Hung on the fence in Southern California.
Nice.
My favorite, I had two favorite drivers when I was growing up as a kid, Jim Clark and Dan Gurney.
Yeah.
I idolized those two guys, and I got to meet Dan and Jim both. They made a large impression on me as a young guy, and I just wanted to do what they got to do, and I'm lucky that I've gotten to climb over the fence.
You are very lucky for that.
So I'm guessing if it was Southern California, was that dirt tracks or short?
Yeah, in Southern California at the time when I grew up, well before you guys were on the face of the earth, there was every form of motorsports was there. It was a huge motorsports center then. It would have been like growing up in Indianapolis or like growing up in North Carolina. You had dirt track racing, oval racing, road racing, motorcycle racing, desert racing, drag racing.
Wow.
And a lot of the major race teams were based there. So if you wanted to fall into motorsports, it was relatively easy. I had friends, my father had friends that were in racing, so that was made it a lot easier. It was all I ever wanted to do, and I was lucky enough to be around it early on.
Awesome. So, with such a storied history, what would be your favorite track that you get to visit?
My favorite racetrack?
Yeah.
Indianapolis.
Okay.
All right. That's always a winning answer on this podcast.
You know, as an American in open wheel racing, I think it's pretty hard to find one that compares to that.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with the commitment that you make when you're there. You're there for so long. You spend so much time there. You're so committed to that event from start to finish that the integration of the time that you have there is second to none.
It becomes a part of you.
And it becomes a part of you. And we've been really lucky working for Chip that we've gotten to do forms of racing other than open wheel racing. And until I'd gone to Le Mans, I always just kind of looked at it from a distance. But I'd have to say that it ranks pretty close, to be honest about it. And for an open wheel person to say that, that's a big leap. But it's what's great about it is it compares to Indianapolis from the true sense that it's the fan base there is very generational. just like Indy. And you have 300,000 people at Le Mans race day. So you have a very comparable crowd, and you have the same electricity. And, of course, you have electricity at Le Mans for 24 hours, but it's still a very similar event. So I'd say they rank up there quite close together.
Well, we know your favorite track. What would be one of your favorite memories of your career, for any reason?
Being part of winning in Indianapolis the first time in 2000 with Juan Montoya, because, you know, when you have the opportunity to win and you don't, it's very disappointing. But when you have the opportunity to win and you do, then it's very relieving. And we'd worked really hard as a team, and we went back to Indianapolis in 2000 coming from the CART series when we were kind of outsiders there, and we won the race. And that kind of set us in a direction that we're still on. And it set us apart even among ourselves as to who we had become. We've won Indianapolis since. But I'd say that put us on the map or put us in the direction of where we are today, and I'll always look at that with fond memories.
Absolutely. Well, I think that after the split, I think that did a lot for CART fans to want to come back, because it was the first year back and it was a CART driver that won. I think the diehard IRLs were not as excited about that.
Well, I don't know. It's funny. The race teams were kind of hard to deal with for some reason, and we were surprised about that. The IRL officials themselves had their arms wide open and really helped us a lot. And the fans were kind of mixed there. Some really loved us, some hated us. But all in all, I think it was a great experience, and I think it did then lead to some of the reunification that's eventually happened. Chip's always kind of looked forward. He hasn't always stayed in the present, you know. You know, there's a reason. Somebody told me this once, and I think it's right. Kenny Brack told me this, actually. He said, you know, there's a reason that the windshield is bigger than the rearview mirror. And I think looking forward, when we went to Indianapolis in 2000, was the step that Chip wanted to take.
Yeah. I really like that about the windshield and the rearview mirror.
That's
really a good kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Other than your parents, who would you say has been the most influential person in your life?
Ooh. Well, I don't want to disappoint anybody. Influential is by definition, that one's very difficult, because I think what happens in your life is as you go through your life, you find that there are probably five or six people at my advanced age now, there's probably five or six people that have made, at the right point in your life, have made a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I could name five or six very easily. Frank Arciero, who I worked for on IndyCars originally, was very, very helpful for me. Pat Patrick was very, and Jim McGee, more than that, was very helpful for me. My now ex-wife, Melinda, was huge in my life. She saw things in me that I never saw in myself. She believed in me and pushed me along pretty hard, and she did for the right reasons. And she's made a big difference in my life. And Chip Ganassi certainly has saw in me also what I probably never saw in myself. And but I think you can look at your life very categorically, and you can see how you interacted with people at the right point in your life. There's probably a few more like that that I should mention. but I think they all happened for me at the right time. Everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you believe in the Asian philosophy of the universal system, that everything rotates around the center of the universe, then you come in contact with people at the right point in your life.
Yeah. Okay. I would agree with that. I mean, I think even in my life, there's been times that kind of an unexpected, you know, you get a bit of wisdom from somebody that you wouldn't have expected it from, or they kind of just pop in at just the right time, you're on for something, and yeah, and have a big influence. So that's excellent. Well, and how awesome is that for you to have so many people that have done that in your life?
Well, that just comes with age.
I mean, not necessarily, though. I think there are some people that be your age that, didn't necessarily recognize what it was. So, yeah. All right, so we've asked about your racing career. What else are you into? What do you do in your downtime?
I don't do anything. It's all I do still is work. I play golf once in a while.
All right.
But other than that, I don't really have much of a social life, and my social life is working. I love what I do. To the detriment of some of my personal life, it's all I think about.
Yeah.
I don't log the hours. I just work for Chip Ganassi Racing. I think there's a difference.
Yeah.
And that's what I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Now, this is your 16th season with Scott Dixon.
I don't know.
I looked it up so that I wouldn't say it.
Scott came to drive for us in 2002. And in 2002, I was with Kenny Brack.
Yep.
And 2003, then Scott and I got together. We've been together ever since.
Yeah, have you been with any other driver that long, or is he?
No, I have not.
So who's the longest before that? A couple of years?
Kenny was a year.
Okay.
Let's see. I was with Montoya for a couple of years. Before that, Zanardi.
Okay.
Zanardi was 3 years.
Gotcha.
Scott's one of the longest.
Yeah. So what are some of the pros and cons about that? Because obviously you have to trust one another.
I think that's a fair question. You have to be very, very careful that you don't take anything for granted. That's key. And I think in this business it would be easy to become complacent if you would allow that to happen. You can't allow that to happen either. And what's really good about working with Scott now for me is that even with inflection, we understand each other.
Yeah.
That works pretty well. And we understand each other in terms of what we're trying to achieve on a given day.
Yeah.
And either how... uplifting or how disappointing a day can be.
Sure.
Either one, and there doesn't seem with us that there's anything in between.
I think that's fair. I'm kind of a person where I'm if I feel an emotion, I feel a lot of it. So it's either awesome or it's crap. There's so. Molly's more even keeled than me. She's like, there's little ups and downs. She's like, it's fine, we'll be all right.
That's just because of my job. I have to be. It's fine.
So I read an article. I think it was from last year, where they were talking about you and Scott and how long you guys have been together. And Scott actually said that one of the things that you guys have is that you almost don't even have to talk. You can say two words instead of two sentences.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think you just have to be careful that you say those two words.
Yeah.
Right?
And how they're said.
Yeah, because mental telepathy from the timing stand of the driver doesn't work.
Well, you heard it here
you
first.
Have to speak. Right? You do have to speak.
Yeah. They said, I guess it would be a plus, but you kind of alluded to it. At times, not saying enough is, if I'm hearing you correctly, could also kind of be a negative.
Well, yeah, I think it depends on the driver, too. I've called the race the sports car side for a long, long time, too. And in that kind of racing, you have multiple drivers.
Yeah.
And for me, that's been a very good experience, actually, because each driver is different. So that's helped me with Scott. In a way, to understand the differences in drivers. Right now I'm on the 60 in America in the IMSA team. It's a 67 car. Le Mans would have been the 69 car. But that's Richard Westbrook, Ryan Briscoe, and Scott Dixon. And each one of those drivers are different from the other. And you learn quite a bit about first yourself and then about those drivers as drivers to help them understand what you're trying to achieve on a given day or sometimes at night, what you're trying to get done. And that's helped me a lot with communication with Scott over the years. Because I've been doing IMSA since 2004.
Okay.
So a long, long time.
Yeah, I think that I can see where that would be really beneficial to you to kind of, and help you, continue to hone your own racecraft. Even though you're not behind the wheel, it is a racecraft.
Yeah, it is. I think I drove race cars when I was young and dumb, and I think that really, really does help. If you've driven a race car, you have a better understanding of what the driver is faced with, and you understand sometimes what the driver really needs to hear. And I think that does make a difference. because you're not driving the car, but you have a sense for where the driver is at that moment in time or that point in time. And that's probably also helped me quite a bit in being with Scott or any other driver for that matter.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, because having been behind the wheel, you know what information is important when you're driving behind the wheel. Whereas if you've never been down behind the wheel and, you know, maybe you're a great strategist, but I know for me, one of my big words is like, bottom line it for me. Like, I don't need all the fluff. I don't need the details. You know, I'm like, land the plane. Like, what's the point here?
Yeah.
And so when you have, limited time on the radio to know what the drivers are going to want to know. Or you hear their situation, you're like, okay, they need to know this. We'll save that for afterwards. That's not important right now. Yeah. I'm a bottom line person. Like, let's just land the plane.
Well, I think you have to be very careful that when you call a race that you don't become a mathematician.
Yeah.
Because so a lot of people who call races are. And you still have to have a practical sense about you, about what's actually going to transpire, and make sure that information comes across. Oftentimes, the Isaac Newton in us shouldn't take over.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important to still be able to inhale and exhale and just do it with some amount of practicality.
Absolutely. Well, these are machines, and they're, you can break them down to science and math and all that, but there's still that human element.
Yeah.
And say it's also very different when you have a car by itself versus in competition. I mean, I think that's the same across the board in all sports.
Right.
You put somebody next to somebody else who can challenge their time, and you're going to see better times from both of them.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it's very true. There's been a lot of talk about how the new car is a challenge or a little bit of a fun adventure for the drivers, but sitting in that stand, has it also affected how you would call the race and speak to the driver? Could you talk on that for a moment or two?
Yeah, absolutely. I started working on race, when did I start working on Indy cars? 1981. So I started working on Indy cars in 1981, and guess what? Every year they've been different. From 1981 to 1982, from 82 to 83. They haven't been, in my opinion, they haven't really been the same 2 years in a row, even though maybe the aero kit recently, we're so spoiled by what we think the aero kit is like from year to year. It really isn't. It's subtly different. And so this year is no different than it was for me in 1982. You have to relearn everything. You have to make sure that you aren't so ingrained in what you think you know that you don't leave out the important things of the learning process where you presently are. And on paper the car has a little less downforce, but what's really great about the aero kit, what I really like about what Jay Fry and that group of people, his IndyCar group of people have done, is they've made it easier for you to understand.
Yes.
They made it easy for the fan at home to understand. They made it easier for the broadcasters to explain it.
I mean, I don't think I've heard, fair weather fans talk as much about the aero kit and just the different parts of the car since before the split.
Right.
I love that. And also, the number of people that were at practice through the month of May, I haven't seen the seats that filled
in
a long time.
Yeah.
But,
and it's a very simple kit. You have a front rear, rear wing, a front wing, and you have an underwing, and the underwing controls balance and aerodynamic drag or downforce simply by ride height, and that's it. You have no other tuning devices on the car.
Wow.
And so it's easy for somebody to explain to that. You don't have to have your technical expert in the booth try to explain to you what just happened with 24 downforce items on the car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You only have a front rear wing.
Yeah.
That's easy. That's two. And granted, it's not always perfect, but guess what then happens? The driver has to deal with it. The driver has to make up the difference for you. And that's also, I think, really, really a prime importance. And so I like where we are now. I like where we're going. And I know that IndyCar will tweak on a little bit to make the racing a little better, but it's easy to do with this kit.
Yeah. Well, and I think, anytime you change something, it wasn't drastic, but it was significant. That first year is kind of, trial and error. We have a lot of great ideas, and then you put it out there in action, and we realize that, the math's not going to save us. Now we put humans behind the wheels, and it's a little different story. Now we've got some tweaks to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, remember, the astronauts wanted a window. So it's okay. It's all right.
I'll tell you, one of my funny... just about, like, efficiency, and this is not relevant to this interview, really. It just is funny. Like, we've spent, you know, how much money and research developing a pen that could write upside down. The Russians just use a pencil. Work smart, not hard.
Yeah.
Just use a pencil.
Yeah, right.
All right, so you live, breathe, sleep racing all the time, even in your downtime. Is there anything else you're into, or anything that most people wouldn't know about you? Like, you play golf. Is there any other, like, special talent, skills? Like, I can wiggle my ears, or like maybe a book series that you are into, or movies, or.
We learned somebody wants to play the bagpipes with this question.
No, actually not.
Not really?
Pretty simple person.
Fair enough. Okay, favorite street car ever?
Oh, his favorite street car. 1965 Shelby GT350 Mustang.
Oh, that's a sweet car.
Yeah, and I had a 66 and I had a 67. All original 66, 67 GT350. I've sold them. Now I have a 2008 Bullet Mustang.
Okay.
I have a new 2018 Bullet coming.
Very nice.
Through my friends at Ford. They're building 1,500 of those, so it'll be a limited edition car.
Oh, wow.
I like cars like that. I had a Zanardi NSX for a while. I sold that. Really too lethally fast for the street.
Yeah.
You're
professionally trained, so
yeah,
I think it's fine for you.
Yeah. Okay. But I don't know. To answer your question, probably the original Mustangs were probably my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, that's
because of what they represented at the time.
Just all American muscle car. Like,
all American muscle car. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, for a boy from Southern California, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So now, where do you live now? Where's home base for you?
I live in Indianapolis.
Indianapolis, okay.
Awesome.
I live in Zionsville.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
That's such a nice area up there.
I like Zionsville, and I live down kind of right off downtown in the village.
Yeah.
And I like it down there. It's nice.
Yeah, they've got a nice park up there, too.
Yeah, it's great there.
Well, and I say it's built up, you know, if you're in the, like, the additions, you know, some of those have built up probably a little faster than some of their other neighbors.
Well, I'm not out in the new roof area. I'm in the old part of town.
Yeah, so,
I like that a lot.
But yeah, but it's also, it's just so easy to get anywhere from there.
Yeah.
It seems like it's far away, but it's really not. So. All right, well, I think that might be all the questions we have. So.
We're going to be easy for you. Thank you, sir.
All right, well, thank you again so much.
Okay,
we appreciate
you're
it.
Welcome.
Is there anything else that you want to add? Or?
No, just keep doing what you're doing. I like the fact that you have passion for where you're at.
Well, thank you.
That's really, really nice.
We appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
That's what we have in common.
It is.